Taita brought Nefer back to Thebes from Dabba in the deep sleep of the Red Shepan. As soon as the galley carrying them moored at the stone jetty below the palace, Taita had him carried ashore on a litter, curtained from the gaze of the common people. It would have been unwise for Pharaoh's critical condition to become widely known in the city. There had been previous occasions when the death of a king had plunged the city and the entire state into wild despair and caused devastating speculation in the millet exchange, riots, looting, and a breakdown of all the mores and conventions of society. Once Nefer was safely ensconced in his royal quarters at the palace, Taita was able to work on him in safety and seclusion. His first concern was to examine again the terrible lacerations down the front of the boy's legs and lower abdomen, and assess if there had been any morbid changes. His greatest fear was that the entrails had been punctured and that their contents had leaked into the stomach cavity. If this had happened, then his skills would be of little avail. He unwrapped the bandages, probed the openings gently, sniffed the effluent for the stink of feces, and was greatly relieved to find no taint of that contamination. He syringed the deepest wounds with a mixture of vinegar and oriental spices. Then he stitched them closed with catgut and bandaged them with all his skill, touching them with the golden periapt of Lostris, commending her grandson to the goddess with each wrap of the linen strip. Over the days that followed, Taita gradually reduced the dosage of Red Shepan, and was rewarded when Nefer recovered consciousness and smiled at him.
"Taita, I knew you were with me."
Then he looked round him, still drowsy from the drug.
"Where's Mintaka?"
When Taita explained her absence, Nefer's disappointment was almost palpable, and he was too weak to conceal it. Taita tried to console him by telling him that the parting was only temporary, and that he would soon be well enough to make the voyage northwards to visit Avaris.
"You will find a fine excuse for Naja to allow you to make the journey," Taita assured him.
For a while Nefer's recovery was encouraging. The following day he was sitting up and ate a hearty meal of dara bread and chickpea soup. The next day he took a few steps on the crutches Taita had carved for him, and asked for meat with his meal. In order not to heat his blood, Taita forbade red meat, but allowed him fish and poultry. The next day Merikara came to visit her brother, and spent most of the day with him. Her merry laughter and her childlike prattle cheered him. Nefer asked after Heseret, and wanted to know why she had not come also. Merikara answered evasively, and invited him to play another game of Beo. This time he deliberately opened his central castle to let her win. The next day the terrible news of the tragedy at Balasphura reached Thebes. The first reports were that Apepi and his entire family, including Mintaka, had perished in the flames. Nefer was stricken down again, this time by grief. Taita had to mix him another potion of the Red Shepan, but within hours the wounds in his leg had turned. Over the next few days his condition worsened, and soon he was at the very frontiers of death. Taita sat with him and watched him tossing and raving in delirium, while the livid scarlet lines of morbidity ran like rivers of fire up his limbs and his belly. Then news came from the Lower Kingdom that Mintaka had survived the tragedy that had engulfed the rest of her family. When Taita whispered these wonderful tidings in his ear, Nefer seemed to understand and respond. The next day he was weak, but lucid, and he tried to convince Taita that he was strong enough to make the long journey to be with Mintaka in her bereavement. Gently, Taita dissuaded him, but promised that as soon as Nefer was strong enough, he would use all his influence to convince Lord Naja to allow him to go. With this goal to strive towards, Nefer rallied strongly once again. Taita could see him subduing the fevers and evil humours in his blood by sheer strength of will. Lord Naja returned from the north, and within hours Heseret came to visit Nefer for the first time since his mauling by the lion. She brought him gifts of sweetmeats, a pot of wild honey in the comb, and a magnificent baobab made of coloured agate, with stones of carved ivory and black coral. She was sweet, infinitely gentle, and concerned with his suffering, excusing herself for having neglected him. "My dear husband, the regent of the Upper Kingdom, the illustrious Lord Naja, has been away all these weeks," she explained, "and I have pined so much for his return that I was not fit company for anyone as ill as you have been. I was afraid that my unhappiness might affect you badly, my poor darling Nefa." She stayed an hour, sang to him, and related some of the doings of the court, much of it scandalous. At last she excused herself. "My husband, the regent of the Upper Kingdom, does not like me to leave his side for long. We are so much in love, Nefa. He is a wonderful man, so kind and dedicated to you and Egypt. You must learn to trust him completely, as I do." She rose to her feet, and then, as though as an afterthought, she remarked lightly, "You must have been relieved to hear that Pharaoh Trok-Uruk and my dear husband, the regent of Upper Egypt, have agreed for reasons of state to cancel your betrothal to that little Hyksosian barbarian, Mintaka. I was so sorry for you when I heard about such a disgraceful marriage and how it was thrust upon you. My husband, the regent of Upper Egypt, was against it from the very beginning, as I was." After she had gone, Nefa sank back wearily on the pillow and closed his eyes. When Taita came to him a little later, he was puzzled by the way in which he'd relapsed. He removed the bandages and found that the infection in his injuries had flared up again, and that the malodorous pus streaming from the deepest wound was thick and yellow. He stayed with him through that night, exercising all his skill and his powers to ward off the shadows of evil that surrounded the young pharaoh. At dawn, Nefa was in a coma. Taita was truly alarmed by his condition. It could not be explained entirely by the boy's grief. Suddenly he was startled and angered by a commotion at the door. He was about to call for silence when he heard Lord Naja's commanding voice ordering the guards to stand aside. The regent strode into the chamber, and without greeting Taita, stooped over Nefa's still form and peered into his pale, drawn face. After a long moment he straightened up and signed to Taita to follow him onto the terrace. When Taita came out behind him, he was gazing across the river. On the far bank, a squadron of chariots was practicing their evolutions, changing formations at full gallop. Strangely, there had been much warlike preparation since the Treaty of Hathor. "You wish to speak to me, my lord?" Taita asked. Naja turned to him. His expression was grim. "You have disappointed me, old man," he said, and Taita bowed his head but made no reply. "I had hoped that my way forward, my destiny, as predicted by the gods, would now be cleared of impediment." He stared hard at Taita. "Yet it seems far from allowing this to come to pass. You have done all in your power to prevent it." "This has been pretense. I have had to make a show of caring for my patient, while in reality I have been fostering your interests. As you can see for yourself, Pharaoh hangs over the great abyss." Taita made a gesture towards the sick chamber where Nefa lay. "Surely you can sense the shades drawing in more closely around him. My lord, we have almost obtained our object. Within days the way ahead will be cleared for you." Naja was not convinced. "I am reaching the limit of my patience," he warned, and strode from the terrace. He passed through the chamber without another glance at the still form on the bed. During that day Nefa's condition fluctuated between deep coma and bouts of restless sweating and delirious ravings. When it became clear that the leg was giving him intense agony, Taita removed the linen bandages and found the whole of his thigh grotesquely swollen. The stitches holding the wound closed were strained and cutting deeply into the hot, purple flesh. Taita knew that he dared not move the boy while his life hung on such a slender thread. The plans that he had laid so carefully over the past weeks could not go forward unless he took drastic action. To interfere further with the wound in this condition was to risk a fatal poisoning of the blood, but there was no other course open to him. He laid out his instruments and bathed the entire leg in a solution of vinegar. Then he forced another heavy dose of the red Shepan between Nefer's lips, and while he waited for the drug to take effect, he prayed to Horus and to the goddess Lostris for their protection. Then he took up the scalpel and cut one of the stitches that held the lips of the wound together. He was taken aback by the way in which the flesh burst open and the gagging flood of yellow corruption that poured from it. He used a gold spoon to scrape it clean, and when he felt the metal strike some hard obstruction in the depths of the wound, he probed with ivory forceps and gripped the object in the jaws. At last he prized it free. He took it to the light from the doorway and found that it was a ragged splinter of the lion's claw, half as long as his little finger, which must have broken off as the beast was savaging Nefer. He placed a gold tube in the wound to allow it to drain, then re-bandaged it. By evening, Nefer's recovery was miraculous. In the morning, he was weak, but the fever in his blood had abated. Taita gave him a tonic to fortify him and placed the periapt of Lostris on his leg. While he sat beside him in the noonday, gathering his resolve, there was a soft scratching at the shutters. When he opened them a crack, Merikara slipped into the chamber. She was distraught and had been weeping. She flung herself against Taita and hugged his legs. "They've forbidden me to come here," she whispered, and she did not have to explain who they were. "But I know the guards on the terrace, and they let me pass." "Gently, my child," Taita stroked her hair. "Do not distress yourself so."
"Taita, they're going to kill him."
"Who are they?"
"The two of them."
Merikara started sobbing again, and her explanation was barely coherent.
"They thought I was asleep, or that I wouldn't understand what they were discussing. They didn't say his name, but I knew they were talking about Nefer."
"What did they say?"
"They will send for you. When you leave Nefer alone, they say it won't take long."
She broke off and gulped.
"So horrible, Taita. Our own sister. And that awful man, that monster."
"When?" Taita shook her gently to brace her.
"Soon, very soon."
Her voice steadied. "Did they say how, Princess?"
"Noom, the surgeon from Babylon. Nadja says that he will push a thin needle up through Nefer's nostril and into his brain. There'll be no bleeding or any other sign."
Taita knew Noom well. They debated against each other at the Library of Thieves, arguing the correct treatment for fractured limbs. Noom had come away smarting from the lash of Taita's eloquence and knowledge. He was deeply jealous of Taita's reputation and his powers. He was a rival and a bitter enemy. "The gods will reward you, Merikara, for daring to come and warn us. But you must go now, before they find out that you have been here. If they suspect you, they will treat you as they plan to do Nefer." When she'd gone, Taita sat for a while collecting his thoughts, reviewing his plans. He could not do it alone, and would have to rely on others, but he had chosen the best and the most reliable. They were ready to act, and they had been waiting for his word. He could delay no longer.